on. All right, welcome back everyone to Branding Brews. I'm your host, Ryan Wheaton. I am the owner of Craft Brew Creative, a graphic design and branding studio for the beer space, the beer market. I'm excited for this episode. We are joined again by Brian Roth, who had an episode, I think it was like October of 2017. So it's been some time. I've been following along with Brian with what you've been doing, and you've been kicking butt. So I'm really stoked to have you back on here. Specifically, we're going to be talking a bit about your keynote presentation that you did for the BC conference. Brian, man, how are you doing, bud?
Great. Thank you so much for having me back again. It has been a bit of a journey to cycle back around. I think when we first spoke, it was just I was doing my regular freelance coverage of the beer industry. Now I'm spending all of my time, all my freelance time, with Good Beer Hunting as editor for their Sightlines channel, spending a lot of time in numbers and thinking about stories and how kind of quantitative research might fit into that.
Yeah, I was going to say you've been pretty prolific, man.
Thank you.
I think ever so since we did that last interview, and I've been really enjoying following what you've been doing. Congratulations on launching the Good Beer Hunting Sightlines project. Do you want to, since we're here, you want to talk about that just a little bit before we go into more things?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So for a long time, Sightlines, which is kind of the daily, weekly news portion of the stories that get told on Good Beer Hunting, has functioned in kind of the role of giving context to stories of the day. And a lot of times that may be something as simple as there's breaking news, you know, a brewery gets sold, or there's something interesting going on with a new seal or something like that. And Michael Kaiser, who's the creative director, started Good Beer Hunting. He and I had talked about a way to maybe think about Sightlines in a more business-focused sense for a lot of readers. Because one of the things that I'm really passionate about isn't just kind of the reporting and journalism side of telling stories around the beer industry, but I really love trying to get deep into the whys of things. And oftentimes that would lead me down rabbit holes in which there might not always be answers, but I just loved exploring ideas of why a particular style might do well during a time of year, or what's going on with the way that people are thinking about their drinking habits and the better for you segment in alcohol, and doing analyses that are kind of evergreen stories, but end up having these real tangible, practical outcomes for people who work in the industry who might read them. So we had conversations with people around the industry where, you know, they might take something away from a Sightline story that I was doing. And we saw that as an opportunity to launch kind of a complimentary piece that we're calling Sightlines Premium, where it's a weekly newsletter where we do something that's a piece of content that is directly related to what might be relevant for, say, a business decision related to a portfolio choice or the way you approach ingredients for a particular beer brand, kind of exploring the things that I found really interesting so I could hand off some of the daily news coverage duties to Kate Bernat, an incredible reporter who joined Good Beer Hunting not long ago. And so I can focus on some of that kind of the effort of answering questions as best I could.
That's awesome. Yeah. I really love the why, I've been using that a fair amount, like in my branding, working with clients. And I feel like it's such a, especially when it comes to branding, it's easy just to be like, oh, we're going to make quality beer for the masses. And, you know, nowadays with so many breweries, that's just really not unique in any way. And so many stories of how breweries came to be and why they're there are just not really that unique. So I think, you know, if you really start going into the whole like why, I really do feel like that, you know, it's important to dig into those stories. I like that.
And there's so many layers to it too, because, you know, at this point with the maturity of the U.S. beer industry, a lot of the stories that were being told about people starting their businesses have kind of turned into, you know, something of a dime a dozen. It's, you know, somebody who left their cubicle job or left their engineering job to pursue their passion of beer. And, you know, those are incredible, important stories to tell. But once they become a bit more ubiquitous, there's all these other layers of ways that businesses can think about how to best approach what their business is, how they want to talk about the beers that they make or the process or the people that work there and the way they interact with beer. So there's all these other things to it that just can easily go beyond the simplistic, I really love beer and I wanted to make it for other people.
Yeah. I feel like it can play such a, you know, different role in people's lives that I think you can, start to pull out and tease those different ways of telling those stories, talking about stories and all that stuff. I think that's going to be a good segue into discussing your BC keynote presentation. Congrats on that. That's pretty awesome to be able to do that. You want to kind of set up maybe what that was, and then we'll start kind of digging into that. You know, we obviously have the visuals from your presentation with all your wonderful charts and all that, but I have lots of questions for you in regards to how the content you had in that presentation over the podcast.
Sure, the greatest challenge of any storyteller, audibly describe charts for listeners, right?
Right. Yeah.
So this was a presentation I gave in October of 2019 up in Vancouver to the British Columbia Craft Brewers Guild. They invited me up to give the opening keynote for their annual conference. And I was kind of given free rein in terms of what I want to talk about, but obviously it was going to fit in very easily and nicely with my wheelhouse, where I love telling stories and I love bringing in numbers to kind of back them up or give more context around them. So rightfully so, the title of this presentation was What Narratives and Numbers Can Tell Us and What You Can Do About Them. Basically looking at both the idea of storytelling in a very classical sense and how businesses might fit into it or how they can be a part of a consumer story and their interaction and connection to beer, but then also trying to pull some strings at kind of modern day narratives of craft beer in the US and a little bit in Canada as well, to talk about things that, you know, might be a bit common in the way that we talk about what's going on in the industry, craft lagers, for example, or New England IPA, and trying to give context both quantitatively and qualitatively to better explain, you know, why these things are happening and, most importantly, how breweries can think about them in a proactive way to fit within what's going on in their consumers' minds and on their tongues.
Yeah, great summary. Right on. Yeah, I think that's the whole thing, right? Is that the customer is the hero of the story. You know, it's like it's their journey. And I think, you know, we'll get into this more, but yeah, the way, you know, you frame that in how people end up into these like better for you kind of beverages, or, you know, the how hazy IPAs, you know, have gained popularity, and you've dropped in some of the science behind that, which I thought was really interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. And again, we'll get into it more, but the idea that the customer is really the hero of the story. And I think once breweries can maybe start looking at it from that way, I think that could be really beneficial for brands to embrace that and like try to like look through, you know, that perspective. So to start off your presentation, you kind of presented Joseph Campbell's hero journey, which is kind of something like we were just talking about. So is this something that you relate to often when you're like crafting or uncovering stories, or, you know, like, and then how did the hero's journey kind of make its way into how you're presenting your keynote?
For me, telling stories as part of what I do in writing about beer, I don't know if Joseph Campbell's hero's journey is something that is I'm actively thinking about every time, but if you think about what the journey actually is, you know, this, the call to adventure, the hero going through challenges and coming back out on the other side of things, you know, changed forever. This is quite literally, you know, the base of all great storytelling. Whether it's going to be something like Star Wars, which I used as an example to kind of give some tangible examples of what it's like in a recognizable story people know, or if you're telling a story about beer, it could be a feature story where it's someone who's creating a brewery or a beer and kind of how it went from nothing into something really big. And so thinking about things beyond just, you know, what you might hear from your friends or industry peers, I found looking at these kinds of stories through the perspective of Joseph Campbell's cycle kind of important because it helps to give a sense of sometimes quite literal place on this cycle where, you know, a business or a brewer might fit and help guide things along too. So the reason I wanted to bring it in to kick off this presentation was really simply just to get people thinking about in an active way, okay, so we're going to talk about all these numbers and that's useful and interesting. But more important, these things will always fit within what ends up being, you know, a journey of a customer.
Right. Yeah. And I guess I would encourage anyone out there to take a look at the Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey. You know, I guess kind of in short, you touched on a couple of points, but essentially it's kind of a framework that's used often in like movies or stories where there's a main character, the character runs into a problem, then they have to, you know, overcome that problem. There's like a supernatural aid. There's like a point of no return. But I would suggest anyone look into that kind of the structure of that framework. And I recently too, and I mentioned this to you, Brian, over email, but read this book. It's called Story Brand, from this gentleman named Donald Miller, and he's like a big marketing guy. But he used a similar structure to the Joseph Campbell's Hero Journey, but relating it to your branding and your marketing efforts. And I just really, the big thing I took away from that, which I really loved, was, you know, I think it's really easy as somebody who runs a business, like, and, you know, say like a brewery, to focus on themselves a lot. I'm sure you're familiar with talking to a lot of breweries, like the challenge of brewing a beer that they really love, but do the consumers love it that much, right? Or they're just focused on what they like. So I think the idea of putting your customer as the hero of the story, it's really all about the customer. So I think that's really important to look at and understand. So I would definitely suggest that book as well. Story Brand, I think that was a really good one.
Yeah, the most common thing I think I've heard in almost a decade of writing about the U.S. beer industry is a phrase from any brewer pretty much anywhere in the country where it's some variation of, I brew what I like to drink, and I hope other people like it too.
Yeah, right.
And you that certainly works. It has worked in the past, and it will certainly work in some variation in the future. But as more of these businesses, you know, enter the industry, we're over 8,000 in the U.S. at this point, you have to also start thinking about who your customer is. Is that, yes, you're always going to make beer that you like to drink if you're in charge of the business, and you can let your taste buds kind of guide what those final products are. But it's also to the point now where we can't ignore the fact that your literal job as a business owner is to make money. So you kind of have to start thinking about your customer.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you kind of went on a bit into that the hero of this journey or of this story, wanting to get, you know, to be fit, you know, and lose weight, or to, and then they find themselves in this kind of better for you category, and that they may not necessarily be going to the gym, but hey, if they get to cut 100 calories out of their diet, maybe that's going to help them. And I think how you related that to the story, I think maybe really helps people understand, like, you know, maybe why this better for you category of like seltzers or whatever, hard kombuchas have been doing better. So yeah, I think that's a really great relation you made there. So kudos on that.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite charts that I've talked about over the last few years. It's a Gallup, a polling company, going back about 20 years. They've got a survey question where they ask Americans, do you want to lose weight? And then if people answer they want to lose weight, they're asked a follow-up question of, are you seriously trying to lose weight? And the percentage of people who want to lose weight is usually around 2/3 of respondents. It's usually about 60% or so. And without fail, every single year, the percentage of people who are seriously trying to lose weight is half that. It's usually in like the high 20s, low 30s. And it really speaks to this unique variation of the American psyche as it relates to beverage and food choices, where we want to be healthy and we think about things in terms of healthiness. Like Atkins is a great example, that you can lose weight and you can eat all of the meat and fat that you want. And these better for you brands, Michelob Ultra kind of being one of the big ones, but hard seltzer certainly being another one with so much play on calories calories and carbs, that you can still drink your alcohol, but you don't have to feel guilty. And that matches up so well with the way that I think Americans perceive their weight loss ambitions and what they want to do for it.
Yeah, like there was a nice pause and laughter when you presented that slide. I think that was great. I think that went over really well. And then also in your presentation, you had a quote that I think is really, really great by Plato, and it's "Those who tell stories rule society." So I think, you know, how or in what areas do you think breweries could be telling their stories better?
Well, there are all sorts of ways. And, you know, an easy way to look at it might be through social media, and everyone's got their particular presence. But one of the things that I've had conversations about maybe more recently is that connection between a brewery and media members, and the way that they might be able to attract media to tell a story, or to get more interested in talking about what's going on there. That kind of thing, it's not just as easy as taking a picture of your latest release or saying, "Hey, we collabed with these people. Isn't that cool? Do you want to write about it?" There have been a handful of examples just in the last couple months where, you know, I get emails from all over, and people are writing me about their collaboration beers, asking, you know, "Is this something that you'd like to write about?" And my response is always, you know, this is no longer an uncommon thing. You know, collaborations between breweries happen every single day. Is there something different or unique about this? Tell me more. Tell me the story behind what's going on here. And even a simple step like that, making it a bit more detailed, a bit more explicit, and trying to go beyond just, you know, the headline is "Two breweries collaborate on a beer." But the story itself is so important, where if it's, you know, it's brewery X and Y who share something wholly unique, and it's not just because, you know, one likes hops and the other likes making IPAs and let's just make an IPA together. But if there's something that really kind of sets itself apart from the dozens of other collaborations that take place every week, I think that's an area where breweries can work more and excel in storytelling to get people more invested in it, not media as well as drinkers.
Yeah, I think that, right, paying attention to those little details of, you know, I guess on the face of it, you're like, "Oh yeah, we did this collaboration, and it's between brewery A and brewery B," and right, but that's no longer unique. And I think if you take the chance to look at the reasons of why that came together, I think there's always like more of a story there than you maybe are aware of or that you thought of. But the style, maybe you chose a certain, you know, reason between the two breweries why that made sense, and there's probably a story there if you unpack it some more. I wholeheartedly agree on that one, and I think especially in saturated markets, like I'm here in Portland, Oregon, that's, you know, a thing more than ever. It's like, "Oh, you got a beer release. Okay." So there's like, how many of those are there coming out per day or whatever?
And one of the ways I think New Belgium last year, 2018, I can't remember, what did an incredible job with this, is where they were highlighting their employees in a series of video vignettes. Now, I understand, you know, breweries, video production budget doesn't always end up as its own line. Talking about employees, and not just the brewers and the owners, but the shift brewer or the person behind the bar who's serving customers, as, you know, ideas and connections to locality become ever more important when, you know, it's like 85% of legal drinking age Americans live within 10 miles of a brewery, is the stat that the Brewers Association shares. You know, the connection that people have with their community, and then in addition, the businesses in the community, really matters. And that's something small breweries can do too. You know, it could be a blog post with a nice photo and some paragraphs, or a Q&A with someone who works there who, you know, I may see if I'm coming into the brewery a couple times a week. I might not know anything about them beyond their first name. And that kind of connection can matter so much in terms of just trying to create more depth beyond just, "I really like that beer. But man, I really like these people too."
Yeah. Yeah. And then that gives you something to be able to put out on social media, and you can kind of, just more of that content and stories, and then you can break that down and use it for social media marketing and stuff, for sure. So I mentioned just again that, well, I'm in Portland, Oregon, and we've had 6+ breweries close within like the last few months. And I think if you looked at these closely, you'd likely find some patterns that you know that could be telling for why these breweries have closed. How do you think breweries can maintain being an integral part of their customer's journey, the customer being the hero, and stay relevant?
In my presentation in Vancouver, part of that, you know, the Better For You example is one. The kind of popularity of New England IPA is another, is that it's this push and pull between recognizing trends that are going on broadly and identifying when and how and where they're happening locally too. So, you know, what you're doing as a business and what your lineup might be in your tap room certainly can have aspects that connect to where tastes lie. But if you're paying attention to what your consumers are doing or what they're talking about when they come into the tap room and having those conversations with them, I think that's a space where you really get a sense of it goes beyond the, again, you know, I'm making beers that I like to drink. All of a sudden, you start bridging that gap and you think about things in terms of, okay, you know, this is beer that I'm brewing for them. People that are coming in to share their time and money with you. And so paying attention to where people are in their story really matters. And that could be, like I'd mentioned, you know, in the U.S., the way that efforts circle around, you know, I want to lose weight, but am I actually trying? With New England IPA, it's really interesting because if from a pure biological level, we as humans are trained to like the characteristics of that beer, the viscosity of it, the techniques of hop bursting to bring about more intense and juicy flavors. These are things that we're naturally attracted to. And that's one part of why people enjoy them. And in a lot of cases, that brings people into your tap room too. So if you have all of a sudden this great excuse that you can make a beer that you feel like people will really like, they'll like it on a biological level. You've got feet through the door, butts in the seat. And all of a sudden, by this beer, you get to then kind of think about how you're fitting within their drinking habits and their own story and what they're interested in too.
Yeah, and you brought this up too in your presentation, discussing how all these headlines are reading like, you know, 8 reasons why lager is going to rule 2020 or whatever. But then once you kind of broke down, you know, that kind of hype of these like article titles, that maybe not necessarily be as much as they're making it sound to be. And just like, you know, the case, you're comparing some of these beers, you know, to like Michelob Ultra. So if you take Sam Adams and Sierra Nevada and all these ones, but then you multiply them by 2.5, you're barely hitting the Michelob Ultra level. So it's like these are headlines that breweries are hearing, and you know. But I think what you're basically were saying was just like that it's like kind of being hyped, but is that really what the customer is actually wanting? And I think that's was cool to see. From that perspective, that maybe you shouldn't be paying attention to all these like headlines, or you should be paying attention to your customers and seeing what they're actually wanting and drinking. And that probably will help.
Yeah. One of the things I said during the presentation was it's not that these stories aren't false. It's just that they're not entirely true the way that we talk about it. And the example with American craft lager, I wasn't being hyperbolic when I was talking about it during the presentation. You know, almost every week during the summer, there was a story somewhere in media, whether it was major national media or trade publications, talking about how amazing craft lager was. And, you know, it was the 5 hottest trends of 2019. It was one of the 7 trends in the beer industry to watch in 2019. It was one of the 8 top craft beer trends of 2019. These are all different stories. And by the way that it was getting covered, you think, oh my gosh, this is this this almost amazing thing that we didn't see coming, and then it's just going to be transformative for the industry. Well, if you look at the actual numbers, yeah, craft lager is growing, but IPA still sells 7 times more than it. Pale ale still sells 3 times more than it. You know, wheat beer still sells almost 2.5 times more than craft lager in stores. So while that means that, yes, maybe it's worth your while to pay attention to that style and how it might fit into your portfolio, the store, that's only part of the story, because people are still flocking to hoppy stuff and other kinds of beers that are largely outselling them on a whole. So it's, again, kind of taking your head and poking it up and seeing what's going on around there. And your friends and peers may be talking about how amazing craft lager is. And certainly, you know, enthusiasts you hear all the time how much we love it, myself included. But the big headline of the story is IPA still rules everything around us.
Yeah, and that's the perfect segue into one of the slides you had that was low ABV isn't driving brand growth. And essentially, you know, that the IPAs and the higher ABV beers are actually still big sellers. And like we were just discussing, you know, like a lot more so than these ones you think are being hyped. And then one of the quotes you had from this slide was, as with health and wellness, low ABV isn't having a clear impact on brands. And I think you had a chart, of course, but from Nielsen, talking about like what's important, like, so they surveyed customers and asked them what's important from your craft beer. And I think that was, for me personally, was pretty like breathtaking. It just, or just to see it out like that, which was, I thought, really great. And then low ABV was the last on this big chart of like all these things, and high ABV was just above that. But there were so many more attributes that were more important to customers, like flavor and freshness and aroma and ingredients, and that really seeing that like laid out. And again, talking about what the customers actually want. They're the hero of the story. But I think, so my question from all that was that, you know, there's all this buzz and stories going around about seltzer and better for you beverages, low ABVs and sessionable beers. I mean, what did you think that your findings in this presentation mean for breweries these days?
Well, the interesting thing with both of these narratives is that they can and are existing mutually exclusive of each other. That people can enjoy, you know, better for you, in quotation marks here, hard seltzer, a 5% ABV, 100 calories. They can enjoy craft lager, you know, 4-point-something% ABV. But at the same time, the style that is almost the quite literal entirety of growth in craft beer sales is IPA. And if you look at the ABV categories of where sales are happening, sales, this is through about the midpoint of 2019, sales of beers of less than 5% ABV were actually declining in growth rate, while 5% to 7% were up, I think it was about 4%, and anything above 7% ABV was over 10% growth compared to 2018. And a lot of that is driven just because IPA matters so much. But then even if you look at the top 20 selling brands in IRI, so this would be grocery, convenience, liquor stores, the top 20 IPAs in 2014, the ABV was 6.7%. In 2019, it was 6.9%. The top 20 non-IPAs, this includes Bud Light, Miller Lite, Coors Light, 4.9% ABV in 2014 and 5% in 2019. Now, I know we're talking about a tenth of percent, but, you know, a lot of those brands, you know, are based on that lower scale. And across the board, whether it's a BA-defined craft beer or something from all of beer as tracked by the National Beer Wholesalers Association, all the ABVs, the average ABVs are going up. So the average craft beer that's BA-defined right now is about 6% ABV. And a lot of that has to do with IPA. So while it's, again, like it's important to look at the true story that more people are drinking seltzer, that's you know, a $2 billion category in 2019. That's part of it, but you also can't ignore if consumers are saying, you know, I want lots of flavor. I want something that's fresh. I want something that smells great. You know, don't close your brewery and start a seltzery just yet. Think about what people are saying on a local and national level, and think about how that fits within what you're doing with your business too.
Yeah, absolutely. So then you had a section in your presentation with the idea of people drinking differently. And then you were discussing kind of the premiumization, but people spending more money, drinking higher alcohol content, and changing the interaction with the things people buy. I think we've seen this happen a lot, like in beer. I mean, for instance, we're talking about like high dollar, you know, the high dollar can four packs or premium bottles offerings from breweries. And lately, more and more, it seems like smaller breweries are going into this kind of wine club model where customers are paying in advance, you know, for access to premium and maybe limited run bottles. Why do you think purchasing the premium options matters to customers so much?
Well, the fun thing about this is it's not just beer. And this is part of consumer behavior across a whole host of categories, whether it's ice cream or bread or pet food.
Yeah.
People are spending their money very differently. And when it comes to alcohol, if you look at historical numbers, and this is, you know, look at the last 50 years, people are drinking less, they're spending more. And perhaps most important, as it comes to beer, people are drinking beer less, but they're still willing to spend more. You know, the rise of Michelob Ultra itself is this great kind of example that encapsulates all these things we're talking about, where it is a marketed beer with a very specific purpose around health and wellness, the better for you category. In terms of volume, it is selling a lot. I think it's number 5 in 2019 overall. It'll probably be number 4 by volume in IRI stores in 2020. But it's knocking on number 2 in terms of dollar sales in stores because it's a premium priced product. It's priced well above Bud Light, Miller Lite, Coors Light. And people are willing to pay more for this particular brand because it fits within the story that they want to tell and experience, which is one of health and wellness. And so craft beer and small producers play a part in this where, you know, buyers might be willing to spend more on something that's local, that presents them with the antithesis of what they might imagine that Bud Miller Coors drink to be, that big, powerful IPA. And there is, you know, you can draw a line between the willingness of experience and flavor from, you know, that bland vanilla brand that you can get at Target versus that, you know, artisanal ice cream store down the street from you. There are all sorts of examples where, you know, that kind of experiential good, people are willing to shell out more for that particular experience.
So what, you know, we're now in January 2020. It's now the future. What do you got in store for you? What are you excited about for this year?
Oh gosh, well, I'm actually going to be doing some more presentations in the spring. I'll be visiting Texas twice, once for the Texas Craft Brewers Conference to present their opening keynote. I believe that's the 1st of March, and that in Austin, I'll be heading back to San Antonio in April to be a part of a panel discussion at the Craft Brewers Conference, and then see what else is staying out there for me. I'm really excited about this, the Sightlines premium stuff that we're doing, Good Beer Hunting, and kind of the freedom that's given me to explore some of these really relevant topics as it relates to business decisions that people are making, like what we've been talking about. Just holding on as best I can and hoping for a good ride.
Well, yeah, man, like I said, you've been kicking butt, and I've been enjoying following along with you. So appreciate all you're doing out there.
Thank you.
And yeah, I appreciate your time. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for your time here on joining us again. I really, really enjoyed your last interview. I think you present a lot of information well, and I appreciate that. So yeah, man, thanks for joining the podcast again. I appreciate it.
Always.
Thanks for checking out Branding Brews. My name is Ryan, your host, and also the owner of Craft Brew Creative. With over 15 years of experience in branding and design, I am able to bring my knowledge not only to this show, but to great clients that make great beer. From the essentials like websites, labels, tap handles and sales sheets, to merchandise and vehicle wraps, Craft Brew Creative would love to help develop a cohesive and strong brand for your brewery. Craft Brew Creative thrives on delivering value through a collaborative, fun, and interactive design process. Whether you're an existing brewery or a brewery in planning, Craft Brew Creative will be a valuable partner to your team. If you're in need of any design or marketing services, I would love to get in touch. Head on over to craftbrewcreative.com for more information, or just feel free to email me, Ryan@craftbrewcreative.com.